The first question is from Andrea Venditti from Vontobel. Please go ahead.
Yes, hi. Thank you for taking my questions. Maybe to start on the credit cards, obviously most impacted business. And thank you very much for the additional disclosure on a monthly basis. Very helpful. Did I get it correctly that basically what the usual pattern is that, you know, after transaction volumes increase, we should see also revenues obviously follow? And second one also, is the reason for the delta there driven by, you know, foreign travel, which is obviously still very slow, I guess. Then maybe on the operating expenses side, you mentioned the branch closures that obviously had some costs in the first half. Can you maybe quantify that? And also, can you maybe quantify the benefits we should see going forward, and whether these will already be in the numbers of the second half? Finally, on the maybe a bit more of color in terms of the loss performance and how you manage that basically on the risk management. So maybe you can add a bit more of color in terms of what you're doing in terms of managing that regarding the collection processes, what has been changed, and also this debt restructuring solutions you mentioned, how this really looks like. And finally, did I get it correct that by solid loss performance for the full year, basically this means a similar loss performance of as in the past, i.e. around the 1%? Thank you.
Thank you, Andreas. I think you split the questions nicely among the three of us. So I will take the first one, and then OPEX will be taken by Pascal, and the loss performance is, I think, the piece for Volker afterwards. So on the credit cards, what you typically saw is basically, as of beginning of March, the international spend stopped completely. So basically, there are basically three ways for international spend that we normally see in our business. One is cross-border shopping. How people go in the weekends. And again, now we're not a travel card. Our customer only uses the card when he goes on holiday or when he does cross-border shopping. We're not a frequent traveler card. So three ways of shopping. One is basically the weekend cross-border shopping. Second one is people who start to book holidays in March and April. And the third one is basically spending in the summer, you know, when they are abroad. Those are basically the main resources of international spend. Well, the cross-border shopping stopped completely basically because the borders were closed till the 16th of June. Then people did not book any holidays. So hotels, airlines, all those things that were basically not happening. And what we see now is that people go over the border, they go on holiday, they start booking holidays, and they also start spending when they're in Italy, when they're in France, spending on the cards. So, but basically, until the 16th of June, basically, and nothing happened there. So you basically had two, three completely lost months. So I'm not sure it comes completely back. I think the long haul is still far away. We're not in the U.S. yet with holidays, but I think the European travel is coming back, and it also will help the credit card. So really, the foreign travel was the bigger issue for us in the second quarter. I think the spend on itself is not so bad because you see it really coming up already in June, which is basically domestic spend. On the OPEX side, Pascal, please give some info there.
So regarding the branch closure, the group, so we recognize an impairment loss of 575,000 on operating lease for this period due to the planned closure of the various branches. So this is here, though, what we reported. And look, on the synergies, ultimately, we are very pleased with the progress we make on the realizations of synergies related to Cashgate. And also these synergies, so we are fine as well to confirm that we will deliver the incremental net income, run rate net income between 25 to 30 million in 2020 as planned and as already as I mentioned several times.
Yeah, a few comments on the loss performance and giving a bit more color on how we are managing that. I mean, obviously, in an expectation of an economic downturn, the things that you obviously need to do is to manage collections for the credit risk that you already have on the balance sheet, and you need to be cautious on the additional credit risk that you are taking on the balance sheet. So we were very early in March already in rolling out collections strategies and also kind of staffing up collections to to ensure that the collections processes are really running smoothly. So we are monitoring them closely. We have been kind of additional resources in so that we don't run into any backlogs in collections. And we are also applying some collections tools to help customers that are in financial difficulties. And here you can think about prolongation. So if a customer has a personal loan, we've just prolonged it by 1 month in the end, and the customer has a payment-free month in between. Or we do a short-term payment plan with the customer. But as Robert mentioned earlier, these tools are actually not very much used because we put some thresholds in place so that the customer needs to evidence that he or she is actually hit by COVID-19 and the consequences of that. So we are quite cautious in using these tools. And over the last weeks, we actually see also that the demand for these tools is decreasing. So it's an insignificant portion of the portfolio that is affected by that. And on the underwriting, it has also been mentioned that we are kind of cautious on SME lending. We are cautious on exposed segments. Think about people that work currently in the travel industry or in restaurants. Here we are obviously extra cautious in granting new credits and loans to these. And then you asked the question about the solid loss performance. So what do we mean by that? And, I mean, we're always not guiding to a loss performance on a number level, but I think we can say that we wouldn't, based on what we know today, expect any material deviations from the loss performance that we have seen in the past. But the environment is still very fragile. I mean, we don't know if a second wave is coming, and therefore we chose the more cautious wording to talk about a solid loss performance.
The next question is from Martin Emes from UBS. Please go ahead.
Yes, good morning, and thank you for the presentation. I have a couple of questions, please. Firstly, on development of net financing receivables, we saw the details, 3-4% decline in most segments. But Robert, I think you alluded to the fact that some of it actually might be just simply attrition as a result of the Cashgate integration. Could you give us some color or your best guess, you know, what is really coming from the Cashgate attrition, and what is perhaps lower demand or, on the flip side, lower lending appetite from your perspective? And also maybe an outlook for the second half. How much of this could be coming that back, and what could be the key levers? Secondly, follow-up on card fees. I think it's much appreciated, the detail on the monthly revenue run rates or revenue performance versus last year. Could you talk a little bit about what has happened really since the opening of the borders, and what are you seeing in July numbers? Is that trend continuing? Is really foreign spend coming back? And should we expect basically an extrapolation of the current trend, perhaps not to completely full year last year's levels, but something close in the second half? And thirdly, a question for Volker, maybe. The 2.3 million environmental reserve, if I understand correctly, this is a general provision. Could you give us a little insight in terms of how this is calculated, and then what are the key drivers of this? Thank you.
So thank you, Mate. I will take the first two questions, and then the last one is, of course, for Volker. So on the receivables, it's not easy to say. I think if you look at the market now, the market of personal loans went down 2%. And so I would say that, you know, if you look at our performance, 2% is probably driven by the market, and 2% probably driven by the Cashgate integration. What we always said is, you know, if we acquire somebody who's number three in the market and we combine the assets, we're going to lose some market share. I give you one example on the Tesla side. Now, so Tesla was working exclusively with Cembra and with Cashgate. They always have a second provider in the market, so they took Bank Now as second provider. So we will lose some of the Tesla volumes, which is logical and I think normal. So I think it's difficult to guide this for the rest of the year, now, but I think, you know, in our business plan when we acquired Cashgate, we have really put some loss of market share in there. And we always said we think we can deliver 25 to 30 million net income because we don't know how much market share it's going to be. And it's going to be a mix between synergies on the cost side and some dis-synergies on the revenue side. So far, the dis-synergies are very limited, but also the new applications have been a bit lower than expected, so you don't really know. So I expect that we will lose some market share this year. I think that would be normal. But I'm very hesitant to give you an outlook for the second half. On the card fees, I understand the question. No? I understand that everybody wants to know how it's going to be in the second half. Honestly, I don't know. What I've seen since the opening of the borders is that international spend is coming up, not at the level as last year because, you know, there's the big international volumes, the big international long-haul travel is not there, but it's picking up nicely. July and August are important months for us. I can't comment basically on the July numbers though. As so far, I think it would be not very prudent to tell you now what I think it's going to be. I think we see a pickup in volumes in July. We see also a pickup in international spend. But again, you know, I'm a bit like Falcon. Now, let's see if there's a second wave or not. The environment is still very volatile. You also see some releases about potential second waves, countries locked again. So I would be very, very hesitant to give you really expectation for the second half. I think I can't do it at the moment, but it's turning into the right direction for sure.
Yes, and one kind of more item around the environmental reserve. I mean, the standard reserving models that we are using for calculating allowances for future losses, they basically look into the past and they look into the present distribution of the receivables along kind of risk classes. But they are not looking too much into the future. But we are now in a situation where we know that we have probably a macro downturn ahead of us. And the standard reserve models have not taken that into account. So there is a timing gap until they have considered that. And because of that, we put the environmental reserve in place. And we kind of calculated the amount by using benchmarks that we had from the 2008-2009 financial crisis. And at that time, and we mentioned that before, also the portfolio has been quite resilient. So we also kind of expect resilience now, but there can be a tiny impact by the change of the macro variables into what it means for the default behavior on our book. And we just didn't want to wait until we see it in reality in our book. We just wanted to anticipate that and accelerate that and took it therefore already into the loss provisioning for the first half.
It's maybe a bit prudent, but we like to be a bit prudent than you. I think we're known for running the business quite conservatively.
Excellent. Thank you very much. That was very helpful.
The next question is from Michael Kunz from ZKB. Please go ahead.
Yes, good morning. One question regarding the dividend. With a setback in commission income due to the corona lockdown, you might get in conflict with keeping the dividend stable and staying within your 60 to 70 range. Based on what would you decide which of the two rules you would follow, like keeping stable or sticking to the not more than 70 by all means? Thanks.
I can take it. Pascal, looking at me, you should take it. Look, I think the dividend, I think first of all, I want to remind everybody that we paid a very nice dividend this year as one of the few banks in Switzerland. We haven't changed the midterm target, so the target is 60 to 70% dividend payout. I think it's too early to say it's going to be 60 or it's going to be 70. I think it depends on the full year. It depends on the resilience, I think. I know. But I think it should give you some comfort that we're maintaining our midterm targets. So we mentioned again that we're going to maintain our dividend target of 60 to 70%. I'm not in a position to comment if it's going to be 69 or 61, something like this. But the target is still there. We don't think we should change it. And I think we're in a very good position to pay a dividend as well early next year.
Okay, thanks.
The next question is from Andreas Brun from Credit Suisse. Please go ahead.
Hi, I have got two questions left, one for Robert. The card for Microbank is delayed. How long is it delayed, actually? Can you be a little bit more specific? And then one for Pascal. If the CashGrade integration is completed, all else equal, given that we had 6 million costs in H1, or put it differently, there will be no costs from the CashGrade integration in H2 anymore?
Yeah, thank you, Andreas. I'll take the first one. Look, the Mikro got a new CEO. I think he started April or May, something like this. And they also, like us, though, they are in a COVID situation, and they decided to review all the projects. So I can't say, how long it's going to be delayed, but I think it's kind of expected when you have a new CEO that the person is going to say, look, I want to look at all the projects. For them, this is an interesting project, but I cannot judge how important it is for them. So I think for us anyway, the impact is not going to be material because, we didn't expect anything for this year, and we said maybe we can launch it at the end of this year. Also, the income of this card is much lower than on the Mikro contract. It has nothing to do with the Mikro contract. It's completely separate. So it's with Mikro Bank. It has nothing to do with the Mikro deal or with the Mikro contract. Look, I cannot force the guy to tell me exactly when you decide on your project. So I don't have the answer. As soon as I have the answer, I'll let everybody know. Pascal?
Yes, on the CashGate integrations, Andreas. So first, at the time of the acquisitions, we announced that we would spend around $25 million for the integrations, for the transactions cost, as well as the transactional service agreement with Aduno as a seller. So in the meantime, as we incurred out of this 25 so plan, we incurred $8 million in 2019, as reported last year. Then we incurred for the first 6 months of those $6 million, so $14 million. What I also mentioned before is that we have a capex of around $5 million in addition to that, which will be depreciated over the next around 5 years. So in total, I expect instead of 25, now 20 million of total costs related to the integration, transactions, and transition agreement. And the remaining cost now for the next 5 years is around 5 million to be amortized linearly.
Thanks.
The next question is from Benjamin Goy from Deutsche Bank. Please go ahead.
Yes, hi, good morning. Two follow-up questions from my side as well, please. The first one also on card fees. Thank you for highlighting the importance of international spending. But just generally, I was wondering whether international spending is more important for H1 with the booking, or then H2, as you said, with July and August travel holiday times. And then the second question is on your credit grade migration. I guess no big surprise that the CR1 declined a bit and it moved into CR2 and CR3. Maybe you can give a bit more color in terms of products and the movements you're seeing there. Thank you.
Yeah, hi, Benjamin. I'll take the first one on the card fees, and then Volker is talking about credit grade migration afterwards. So on the card fees, there is quite some volatility in the international spend and also on the total spend. What you typically see is peaks in July and August on the international spend, because this is the holiday time, and you also see quite a big peak at the end of the year in December in total spend. So there's a basically the biggest months for us are July, August, and December. And December is more the total spend, and July, August is more the international spend. You see normally quite a low spend on January, February, then it's picking up in March, April, May, because people start booking the holidays. It peaks in July, August, and then it's coming down a little bit in September, and then pretty slow in October, November, and quite some pickup again in December. That's normally what you see on the card fees. Volker?
Yeah, on the credit grade distribution, it's actually a very good observation that you are doing here, because I mean the credit grades, they reflect a probability of default. So kind of what do we expect in defaults going forward? And you will see that kind of the high-risk credit grades, they have been kind of increasing slightly. And this is driven mainly by the personal loan book, which is actually also logical because this is obviously not secured lending, it's unsecured lending. So in an economic downturn, these are the portfolios where we would also expect the default rates to increase, so the worsening. And that is exactly also the reason why, when we have been talking about this environmental reserve, we have been applying it on the personal loan book and not on the other books.
Very clear. Thank you.
Good. Thank you for taking the time. Thank you for joining the call. I hope to speak to all of you very soon. And for now, bye-bye.